on students' encampments, clearing out the tents and making dozens of arrests. In Seattle and at the University of Washington, students called on the authorities to cut ties with Israeli-linked companies. At the University of California in Los Angeles, protesters said they are determined to continue with their sit-ins and rallies until authorities meet their demands. So far, some 2,200 have been arrested on campuses. Pro-Palestine campus protests have gained global momentum, with Mexican students also joining in.
We want to try to stop the genocide, to stop seeing all these terrifying videos that I see every day on my phone, by joining this movement here to demand with a stronger voice that relations with Israel be broken.
In Mexico, dozens of students camped out at the National Autonomous University of Mexico in solidarity with Palestinians. The protesters expressed support for their counterparts who are being repressed in France, Germany, and the United States. In Canada, too, protesters set up an encampment at the University of Toronto. Anger at Israel's onslaught on Palestinians has also been simmering across top universities in France. A crowd outside Sorbonne University was dispersed after police action. A similar peaceful protest at Sciences Po University was also forcibly dismantled when police were called in.
The protests went very well inside. We demanded the creation of a committee to investigate the university's economic partnership with Israel that violates international law. Jean Besser, provisional director, said it would never happen. Before he said it would never happen, we started a hunger strike. We already have 6 students who have joined it, and there are also 10 more students who will join today. Jean Besser called the police and they took us out. There were police brigades with cordons. They took us out. The police swept away our Palestinian flags and kicked away our messages of peace. Then they took us out, checked our belongings, and checked our identity cards.
Scores of students in Australia recreated echoes of U.S. college protests at the Sydney campus. They also waved Palestinian flags and chanted anti-Israeli slogans. The protesters want to see Sydney University cut ties with Israel and reject funding from arms companies. They have been camped for 10 days on a green lawn in front of the top Australian university. To discuss the growing campus protests across the United States and other countries as a show of support for Palestinians, we were earlier joined by Stravroula Pabst, a journalist from Greece. Here's what she had to say.
I think that the protests that are growing, especially with the encampments that are taking place in the United States and increasingly beyond, show that I think that there's a critical turning point in support for Palestine, especially amongst the youth. To me, it's clear that many of the people participating in these encampments have reached, a great frustration with the situation in the United States, for example, because they've understood over the last several months, as genocide has continued in Gaza, that many of their institutions, many of the American institutions, cannot be called on through traditional political processes to be able to meaningfully stop or address the ongoing genocide. So I think as a result, many people are turning to, many of the students at college campuses have said this is enough. They're taking a stand. And I think that this will be a critical point because it's clear that this is putting a lot of pressure on American politicians to change their stances. It's putting a political pressure on the universities in the United States to divest. And I think everyone else around the world is seeing this, and that's why these protests have become popular internationally. Those who support Israel, and of course many American politicians, have essentially been bought out by Israel's AIPAC. I think that unfortunately, even though public opinion has changed in significant ways, I think that there's still quite a battle to go, simply because many people at the heads of governments, especially in the West, are essentially, I think that they would like the status quo to continue as long as possible.
To the Gaza Strip, where nearly 7 months of non-stop Israeli bombardments have left almost nothing but a long trail of death and destruction. At least 26 Palestinians were killed and 51 others injured in a matter of 24 hours following heavy Israeli airstrikes pounding many parts of the besieged territory. Northern Gaza remains the key target, with Israeli shells leveling its residential areas to the ground. Meanwhile, Gaza's health ministry says the number of healthcare workers killed since October the 7th has risen to nearly 100. The U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza has killed at least 34,600 people and injured more than 77,800. The actual death toll, however, is believed to be much higher, with Palestinian officials saying thousands more lifeless bodies remain under the rubble. Israeli officials have vowed to press ahead with their planned invasion of Gaza's refugee-packed city of Rafah, despite international warnings and condemnations. The UN has repeatedly warned that such an incursion will lead to a humanitarian crisis. Let's listen in to a joint press conference by the representatives for the UN Health and Humanitarian Agencies.
The hundreds of thousands of people who are there would be at imminent risk of death if there is an assault. So we are looking at, if this happens, both what the emergency relief coordinator has warned about could be a slaughter of civilians, but also at the same time an incredible blow to the humanitarian operation in the entire strip, because it is run primarily out of Rafah.
This contingency plan is band-aid. It will absolutely not prevent the expected substantial additional mortality and morbidity caused by a military operation. Also, of course, a military operation will lead to a new wave of displacement, more overcrowding, less access to essential food, water, sanitation, because at the moment, almost all the medical supplies, come through the Rafah crossing, Al-Arish Rafah crossing. So you raise the point, actually it's part also from the contingency plan, which we are extremely concerned about, if the military operation, that Rafah crossing will be closed off.
Welcome back. Jordanians have taken to the streets to express their solidarity with Palestinians amid growing international outrage against the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. The rally took place in the capital city of Amman on Friday. Protesters waved Palestinian and Jordanian flags. They also expressed support for pro-Palestinian protesters at US universities and other parts of the world. People in Bahrain also voiced their support for Palestinians in the war-ravaged Gaza Strip. They poured onto the streets in the region of Deir Ras and chanted slogans against Israel. Yemenis also came out in huge numbers as part of their weekly pro-Palestinian rallies. The Yemeni protesters in the cities of Sana'a and Sa'ada chanted slogans against Israel and its main accomplice, the US. They also voiced support for the army's operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. The demonstrators also praised the Yemeni army's attacks on American and British ships in retaliation for their airstrikes on Yemen. Since the start of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the Yemeni army has carried out dozens of operations against Israel and its linked ships. Sana'a has also targeted American and British vessels in retaliation for their aggression on the country. Now, Yemeni armed forces announced a new round of operations against Israel and its allies in support of the Palestinian people. Let's take a listen.
In implementation of the instructions of Commander Sayyid Abdul Malik Badr al-Din al-Husi, may Allah protect him, and in triumphing for the oppression of the Palestinian people, and in response to the cause of the Palestinian people, and with the intransigence of the Israeli and American army, the Yemeni armed forces announced the beginning of the implementation of the fourth stage of escalation as follows. First, the targeting of all ships that violate the ban decision of Israeli navigation and that heading to the ports of occupied Palestine from the Mediterranean Sea in any reachable area within our ample zone. Second, implementation of this comes into effect immediately and from the moment this statement is announced. Third, if the Israeli enemy intends to launch an aggressive military operation against Rafah, the Yemeni armed forces will impose comprehensive sanctions on all ships and companies that are related to supplying and entering the occupied Palestinian ports of any nationality and will prevent all ships of these companies from passing through the armed forces operation zone, regardless of their destination. The Yemeni armed forces, based on the support of the beloved Yemeni people and all the free people of the nation, will not hesitate to prepare for broader and stronger stages of escalation until the aggression is stopped and the siege on the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip is lifted.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has been targeting Israeli military positions both in Gaza and the northern occupied territories. The military wing of Hamas said it attacked the regime's troops in the Sheikh Ijlin neighborhood in Gaza City in the north of the besieged strip. The Al-Qassam Brigade said it carried out the operation in collaboration with the military wing of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement. Hamas also said it carried out a rocket attack on a gathering of Israeli troops on the key Netzarim corridor, which Israel is building through the middle of the Gaza Strip. The Al-Qassam Brigade said it also fired a barrage of rockets from southern Lebanon at Israeli barracks near the border. Students in several universities across the UK have launched tent encampments to demand their universities divest from Israel and end any potential complicity in the regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Saipul Reza has been present at two of the student protests at a prestigious university in the British capital and sent us this report.
Out of the classrooms and into tents. Students at University College London, the alma mater of Palestinian poet Rafat Al-Arir, killed by Israel in Gaza, calling on their university to take action.
Our demands are three. Simply for the university to divest from any companies complicit in Israeli war crimes. Secondly, for them to condemn Israeli war crimes. And thirdly, for them to pledge towards the reconstruction of the universities destroyed as a result of Israeli war crimes.
We weren't allowed on the campus, so the students came to us, led by a Palestinian doctor who has seen the Israeli atrocities in Gaza firsthand.
This new wave of action builds on earlier, albeit underreported, protests, which included student occupations of university buildings. But the scenes on campuses across the U.S. that have seen more than 2,000 arrested in a violent police crackdown have further galvanized the protests here.
Stop the bombing now!
The movement is spreading like wildfire. Universities of Manchester, Warwick, Sheffield, and several others have all embarked on similar action. So far, the protests have been peaceful. The government has backed a police crackdown on what it called disorder. The Union of Jewish Students has claimed the encampments are creating a hostile and toxic atmosphere, a claim the Haredi Jews who came to support the students rejected.
That it's completely false to blame these students that they are anti-Semites. They are not anti-Semites at all. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism in any way. The opposite is exactly the right thing is exactly the opposite.
Stop the UK war machine! Stop the UK war machine!
With days or weeks left to go in the university term, these students say they'll remain here until their demands are met. Saipur is up, London.
Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
Imam Ali ibn Musa Reza, peace be upon him, has said, if you are filled with joy when you are with us, the Ahlul Bayt, in the upper reaches of the heaven, then be sorrowful when we are sad, and be joyous when we are joyous.
The Limelight.
Former President Donald Trump holds a clear lead over President Joe Biden in four of the seven battleground states that will likely decide the 2024 presidential election. Also, voters in battleground states say the economy is a top issue for them in the upcoming election. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered the story and tells us more. Voters' impressions of how good each presidential candidate is for the economy could determine the outcome of the 2024 presidential election. In Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, where President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump are engaged in close contests, most voters said the economy will be the major factor in deciding whom they will cast their ballot for, according to results from a CBS News and YouGov opinion poll. In Michigan, 80% of voters say the economy is a top issue for them, followed by 77% of voters who say inflation is the top issue. 72% of voters rank the state of democracy as one of the issues that matter most to them. Joe Biden currently has a narrow lead over Donald Trump in the state. In both Pennsylvania and Washington, 80% of voters similarly ranked the economy as one of the topics they care most about this election. Other lower-ranked topics included candidates' stances on gun policy, on crime, the U.S.-Mexico border, and abortion. It's so evident that the economy remains a central issue, but how people interpret the economy, the issues they want addressed to deal with their own economic situation, that's a complicated question with complicated answers, according to CBS News' chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa. About 6 in 10 people polled by CBS News said they rated the economy as fairly bad or very bad, despite economic measures such as low unemployment, growing wages, and a resilient stock market, which points to a strong U.S. economy. That could pose a challenge for Democrats, who Robert Costa said are eager to get the labor voters, the union members, to vote Democratic and pull ahead of Donald Trump. They know that those working voters at times hear the call of the Trump campaign and his message on immigration, and it can be appealing to those voters. And so that's why Democrats are really trying to focus on the economy by focusing on labor. The American newspaper, the New York Post, has a different angle on the same story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump holds a clear lead over President Joe Biden in 4 of the 7 battleground states that will likely decide the 2024 election, and is narrowly ahead of the incumbent in 2 other states, according to a new opinion poll. The Bloomberg News Morning Consult swing state opinion poll showed Donald Trump leading Joe Biden by 7 percentage points in Arizona, 49% to 42%, by 6 percentage points in Georgia, 49% to 43%, by 8 percentage points in Nevada, 51% to 43%, and by 10 percentage points in North Carolina, 51% to 41%. The Republican, Donald Trump, also led his Democratic rival by 4 percentage points in Wisconsin, 48% to 44%, just inside the poll's margin of error. In Joe Biden's birth state of Pennsylvania, Donald Trump led the president by a single percentage point, 47% to 46%, while the president held a 2 percentage point edge over Donald Trump in Michigan, 47% to 45%. Across the 7 states surveyed, Donald Trump led Joe Biden by 49% to 43%. With the inclusion of third-party candidates, Donald Trump had 45% support to Joe Biden's 40%, while independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had 7% support. Independent, Cornel West and Green Party candidate Jill Stein each received 1% of the vote. Joe Biden won 6 of the 7 battleground states surveyed 4 years ago, with North Carolina the only state going to Donald Trump. Swing state voters said the economy was a top issue with almost 6 months to go before Election Day, with 82% saying it will be very important in deciding whom they vote for and 34% saying it would be their single most important issue. Immigration ranked 2nd with 15% saying it was their top issue, while abortion and democracy were tied for 3rd place at 9% each. 7 of 10 respondents said they viewed the US economy as going in the wrong direction, while 57% said the same about the economy in their own state. The bad poll numbers for Joe Biden come despite his campaign spending $30 million in the month after his 7th of March State of the Union address on advertising buys and campaign stops in critical swing states, a push that Democrats dubbed the month of action. The president's campaign has emphasized Joe Biden's record on abortion and attempted to draw contrasts between him and Donald Trump on the economy and the direction that the country is going. A large number of voters are unhappy with their choices, with Trump and Biden both getting dismal favorability numbers. In the 7 swing states, 44% said they had very unfavorable views of both major party candidates, with another 12% saying they viewed Biden in a somewhat unfavorable light, and another 9% saying the same about Donald Trump. Just over half, or 52% of respondents said they thought America was better off under the 45th president, and 51% said their personal financial situation was better under Donald Trump as well. Social Security was also an important issue for the registered voters surveyed in the poll. 77% of voters said they liked the idea of a billionaire's tax to boost entitlements coffers. More voters found Joe Biden trustworthy in handling Social Security and Medicare by a 6 percentage point margin, 45% to 39%. Americans realize if they want to make gas cheap again and keep more money in their pockets, they must vote for Donald Trump, campaign National Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt told the New York Post. Joe Biden's economic policies are robbing people of thousands every month, and Joe Biden is doubling down, promising to sign the largest tax hike in American history if given another 4 years in the White House. The Biden campaign did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Bloomberg News Morning Consult opinion poll had a sample size of 4,969 registered voters in seven swing states, 801 registered voters in Arizona, 802 registered voters in Georgia, 708 registered voters in Michigan, 450 registered voters in Nevada, 703 registered voters in North Carolina, 803 in Pennsylvania, and 702 in Wisconsin. The survey was conducted online from 8 to 15th of April and had a margin of error of 1 percentage point across all the swing states.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. So you're well, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
You're welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum to you too, and welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me as always.
You're welcome. The pleasure is all mine to have you back in the studio, helping me actually criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. One of those movies which caught our eyes was Poltergeist. I mean, the newer version. Which was produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kenan. Well, this guy, this director, is known for his work on films such as Monster House, produced in 2006, or The Monster, again produced in 2016. Well, he brings a strong visual style and a keen sense of suspense to the Poltergeist remake. The original movie of Poltergeist was produced in 1982, though. Well, the whole movie is revolving around this story with evil spirits lurking about. The Bowen family's life turns upside down when their youngest daughter is held captive in the depths of their new house. Well, this movie features Rosemary Duet, Sam Rockwell, Kennedy Clemens and Jared Harris, to just name a few of those actors and actresses playing in this movie. Rotten Tomato gives this movie 29%, but IMDb 4.9 out of 10. Well, the budget was $35 million, while the box office was $95.4 million. Let's take a short listen to a part of this movie, a short part, and then we'll be back and criticize this movie.
We didn't know where else to go.
You did the right thing coming here. Maddie was the first one to notice things.
Mom, how will you get here?
Who are you talking to?
When was the last time you had contact with her?
before she was taken?
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kenan. Brother Yasser, let me start this episode with you. What are the themes of this movie, Poltergeist, produced in 2015, and or the message that this movie is trying to convey?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One of the messages is be careful where you build your house.
Mm.
You know, don't build it anywhere. Do proper investigation of the land and you know where the land was. Again, you know, this is again a fiction, a mm-hmm. movie of fiction.
Yes.
Not necessarily that that may be the case. Or, for example, you know, don't take certain elements or certain things for granted. For example, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I remember in the older version of it, the young girl, if I remember correctly, vanished into the house, into another dimension, and you could hear in the walls. I'm sure something happened in the new one as well.
Mm-hmm.
She just vanishes, and you hear sounds, and she's walking around the house and so on. You know, don't take things like this for granted.
Yes.
Not to say that if your child vanishes inside your house, you
mm-hmm.
know. So these are certain things that you can take from the movie. Obviously, understanding it is a work of fiction. It is not real.
Yes.
Obviously, it is playing, if I'm not mistaken, it's on a very old movie. It may be from a book, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Most of the things are from books. But again, this is some of the things that we do. Don't mess with evil.
Yes,
and that's exactly. One of the things that always plays about in all his horror movies.
Yes, fragility of human spirit
exactly.
In the face of the unknown.
You know, that's what they show, right? Unfortunately, this is a message that is not a very good message, though. To show that, oh, you know, the forces beyond the human being are a lot stronger and stuff. This is not the case. We don't believe this, especially in the religious circles. Is that, especially within the Islamic circles, is that those beings or anything that is outside of a human being, it's not that because a human being has this physical capacity and so on, it is weaker. No, a human being is a lot stronger than any of these creations at the end
True.
Of the day. If it wasn't the case, then it wouldn't have been known as the best of creation.
Yes, but most of these movies yeah. are trying to portray what you've been actually advocating, like from the Islamic perspective.
Yeah.
Like you said, for example, don't go near such cult-driven activities or practices, paranormal activities, right? As you said in one of the earlier episodes, mm-hmm. that it's like haram or unlawful, Islamically speaking, for normal individuals, basically. And usually it's based on this kind of, let's say, a proverb which says, curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah.
And mostly when people become curious with such mm-hmm. Metaphysical entities outside of their control, then things could, turn somewhere else where you don't want it.
I mean, also, it keeps the mind busy, right? I mean, that's the point of Hollywood and these movies as well. It keeps the mind busy. So it plays both, right? It creates curiosity
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
It shows the danger of it. So a person, is it really, like a child, is it really like this?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it may also create
mm-hmm.
a kind of attraction to these type of things.
Yes.
You know, because they will show like, oh, it's nice in the beginning
yeah.
and then all of a sudden it flips.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be more careful. You know, that type of person will come. I'll be more careful when I do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it kind of plays on both sides of the coin. You could argue that.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a short part of the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kenan. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio.
It's a fixer-upper.
All the houses are like this in our price range.
You want to see Jack?
No way.
You try.
We like this house!
back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, as always, Syed Abdullah and Pradeep Yasser, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, directed by Gil Keenan, produced in 2015. Syed Abdullah, what's the significance of the dollhouse in this movie, I mean, Poltergeist? And what was the role of the dolls? Could any object be physical manifestation of the entity's influence?
Now, in the movie itself, the smaller version of the house and dolls were supposed to mimic the actual house of the family themselves.
Yes.
And through that, the house was used as a gateway for the spirits to go through and do whatever they do. So it's a mini version of the actual house that acts as a gateway. So you can see this theme. It's not only in this movie, but even other movies where they use the same kind of items of the exact thing, or a doll that represents a person, for example, and they use their voodoo or whatever they want, because they assume that through that they can connect to the actual realm or to the actual people, to the actual houses. So this is what the theme is trying to portray here, that they play that role. When it comes to the doll, the dolls in the film, they used to signify the presence and the influence of the spirits themselves. Now, I don't know why this seems to be a Hollywoodic idea or theme where dolls are the manifestation of spirits. They go through
it. We see it in the other movies too. With the
dolls, it's,
you know?
It's very common. Yeah. It's very common that the doll moves and does things, and you know, the spirit possesses the doll itself. So, in order to scare you,
like, isn't it threatening to the whole business of the dolls? Like, for its sake.
Well, actually, sometimes it works the opposite. Sometimes, if you create a good movie with a good doll, it becomes a selling point. For example, if you talk about, what's that toy's name?
Chucky,
yeah.
Chucky became a household item, you know.
Yeah.
It means a lot of sales. So sometimes if they master it correctly, the actual doll, it ends up being a selling point.
Thank you very much, Syed Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Poltergeist, directed by Gil Keenan, produced in 2015. Then we'll continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critic program on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
We have to call somebody.
We can't call the cops.
What are you going to tell them?
First things first. Your daughter is here, and she's alive. This development was built on a cemetery. This isn't just a few pissed off spirits we're dealing with. It's a poltergeist.
We just want our daughter back.
The door in their world could close at any moment.
If that happens,
there's no getting her back. I want you all to clear your minds. They already know what scares you.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Pradeep Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Keenan. Well, Pradeep Yasser, to what extent is there a relationship between nasty games and experiencing the vicious spirits or the unknown entities? We have seen it in the other movie that we criticized just before.
So again, is there actually a relationship? Is it just a kind of placebo by which a person thinks they're communicating with something? You know, sometimes you kind of, what's the word, self-impose a certain idea on yourself that, oh, this is working.
Like inspired?
Not inspired. Like, for example, you, for example, right? You play one of these demonic games or one of these board games and so on and so forth, and every single sound that you hear, you know, it might just you feel, oh, it's the spirit speaking to me, you know. It's like the self-fulfilled prophecies that you're doing for yourself. how they work, and you know, if they actually do work, I don't know. Again, as we mentioned this in one of our previous, if it is a particular tool that was placed in the hands of man by the demonic forces that are here, then it shows that they may be one of the means by which a human being can, not, again, opening up or something, there's no need to open. There's already a connection between this world and the next world. There's not like a sever between this world and the next world.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, in one, if you want to say. It's very difficult to explain in words. But in order for a particular thing to manifest itself in this realm, is it this needed? Maybe. You know, it may, you know, hit certain buttons.
Yes.
That enable that manifestation to take place. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't
know. I see. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser, and Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the Movie Critique Program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammed Al, hosting this program. And we try to criticize the movie Poltergeist. Of course, we haven't finished its critique. And then we hope that you follow us up for the upcoming episodes to actually finish the critique of this movie. And thank you very much for joining us and listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. World Media News Coverage of Operation True Promise. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. The drone and missile attacks of the Islamic Republic of Iran against the Zionist regime in mid-April received broad media reaction in the world from the very first minutes. Here, we are going to have a brief look at the news coverage of this great event in some of the world media. Please stay tuned. The The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, started Operation True Promise against the Israeli regime in the last hours of Saturday, April 13th, as a penal attack in reaction to this fake regime's terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus. Operation True Promise created an unprecedented night for Zionists since the fabrication of the regime over 75 years ago. This highly important event received media coverage across the world from the very first minutes. The American TV channel NBC News named Iran's attacks as Iran's retaliation and wrote, "Iran's attack was the first direct attack on Israel, and this attack took place a few weeks after the Israeli attack on Iran's consulate building in Damascus, which caused the death of some members of the IRGC, and Tehran had hardly announced the promise for revenge of this attack." Reuters too wrote on Iran's attacks against Israel, quote, "Iran's drone attack on Israel, which had been expected, started in the last hours of Saturday with Tehran's time. The Israeli military has also stressed that Iran launched scores of drones towards Israel. This attack may cause great tension between the regional enemies while the U.S. is committed to support Israel," unquote. Economist magazine, like other media, emphasized on Iran's broad attack and wrote on its website that the Israelis are experiencing a horrible night now. Even if Iran's attack does not cause much damage and losses, it will have broad consequences. Associated Press, in a report referring to Iran's threatening to retaliate the terrorist moves of Zionists, implicitly called Iran's move as a natural reaction and wrote emphatically that Iran's attacks started with more than 100 drones and then continued with destructive ballistic missiles. The media of Arab countries had different reactions to Iran's penal attack on Israel on April 14th. Al Jazeera, for example, quoting from its journalist in Tehran, reported on its website that the compound attack took place against Israel and Iran trampled Zionist red lines. Al Jazeera journalist added, "What is taking place now is not a transient step, and Tehran's reaction for a clear response from the Iranian soil to Israel may incur challenges, but Tehran says that it is prepared for these challenges." The Saudi Al Arabiya channel also covered this great event and chose the Iranian armed forces warning to the regional countries in case of any help to the Israeli regime, writing, "We will respond to any country which lets Israel use its sky and ground against Iran." Qatari Daily Ashar, pointing to the Iranian attack, wrote that the attack had stopped all flights in the occupied territories and even in the course of the missiles and drones. Iraqi news agency Boratha, quoting a strategic expert named Nassim Abdullah, wrote that the goals of the Islamic Republic of Iran have materialized from the military operation against Israel. Meanwhile, the foreign Farsi language media did their best to highlight marginal issues in the heat of the world attention to the Iranian penal operation against the fake Zionist regime. The issues that they highlighted were mostly about the likelihood of the occurrence of a widespread war, emphasis on the Zionist regime's definite response to Iran's direct operation, emphasis on Tel Aviv's military and intelligence abilities, explanation of the repercussions and bitter risks of war, especially for Iran, causing instability in the region, and the duality of the view of the Iranian people and the ruling system regarding the direct attack on Israel. These media made every effort to spread horror on Iran's reaction to the Zionist aggression on its consulate in Damascus through presenting of invalid and unrealistic evaluations and analysis. These hired media, with repeated invitation of experts who persuade broad war and reciprocal attack on Iran, stepped in a wrong path which only the Zionist media have chosen to move in. The Farsi language media based in London not only gave full coverage to the news on the American officials' supportive remarks for the Zionist regime, but also, amid their reports and interviews, stressed the issue time and again, imagining that they could weaken Iran's resolve. Radio Farda, for example, despite pointing to Pentagon's dissatisfaction of being uninformed over Israel's attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus, wrote, "In spite of this dissatisfaction, the U.S. president and other officials have emphasized that they will defend Israel against Iran's likely attack. The latest developments indicate that the military and intelligence officials of both the U.S. and Israel have close cooperation to react Iran's retaliatory attack." Some of the other media, including VOA, compared Iran's military and logistic capabilities with those of the Zionist regime and tried to introduce the victor in the likely upcoming war. Of course, the intelligence and espionage ability coupled with logistic assistance from the U.S., in this media's view, would give superiority to the usurper regime in the battle with Iran. As a matter of fact, these media considered victory belongs to Israel in any likely war and ignored Iran's missile and drone capability and its exemplary influence among the resistance groups in the region. BBC Farsi touched upon viewing the content of the Israeli media on a fitting response to Iran and, quoting an Israeli journalist, wrote, "Israel shouldn't be affected with the U.S. pressures or temptations not to show reaction." Joe Biden, due to the closeness of presidential elections in the U.S., tries to prevent Israel from any aggressive action. Indeed, the assessment of BBC Farsi from the content of the Israeli media was to warn about the U.S. trap and recommendation on direct attack on Iran. Interestingly, while the hostile media spoke of Iran's unsuccessful operation, Chief of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Hossein Bagheri, called the recent operation only a punishment for the Zionist regime and announced that Tehran didn't intend to target Israel's population and economic centers. There is no doubt that the entering of Iran's missiles and drones into the occupied territories has shattered for good the myth of invincibility of the Zionist regime military and the penetrability of Iron Dome and other security shields. It was an obvious penal slap in the face of the Zionist regime, yet the hired media in the West and the region couldn't hide their anger and frustration over the fiasco demonstrated from the Israel in the world. Radio Zamaneh wrote, "Iran, despite its apparently broad attack, launched it in a measured and calculated way to cause the least destruction and only show that it is able to guide a complicated missile and drone operation. The Islamic Republic is still uninterested in war, and the ball is again in another one's court." An analyst with the Zionist regime media described Iran's attack as the doomsday. Alan Ben David, a military analyst of Daily Ma'ariv, said, "Iran has gone to another phase of operation against Israel, and we have to take this for granted that Iran is ready for an operation with a broader attack. During the Iranian attack, fear and concern dominated the air bases that had been targeted. Thousands of soldiers had gone to the shelters asking themselves if the concrete around them would be able to endure the heavy missiles." He added, "The picture of a sky seen on the monitors of the air control center on Saturday night was not similar to what we had seen in Israel or the world before. Hundreds of Iranian drones and missiles were covering their trajectory in low height towards us. Above them, there were scores of Air Force planes, and one level over them, there were more than 100 ballistic missiles. On the opposite side, there could be seen scores of Israeli missiles, and this scene, in the words of an Israeli officer, was likely the doomsday. The Zionist analyst also said that the Israeli leadership was stupid to assassinate the Iranian generals in Damascus without considering its consequences. Now, he's pretending to tame Iran. Iran's attack was a basic change, and now it requires for Israel to revise its behavior towards Iran.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Hamas resistance movement says the Israeli Prime Minister is trying to derail efforts for a ceasefire deal in the Gaza Strip. Palestinian resistance fighters conduct new operations against Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. A Yemeni armed forces announced a new round of operations against Israel and its allies in support of the Palestinian people. For joining us. A top Hamas official says the Israeli premier is trying to derail Gaza truce proposals with threats to continue the war on the besieged territory. Hossam Badran says Benjamin Netanyahu has been obstructing the truce talks. That's amid Netanyahu's threats of a ground incursion into Rafah in southern Gaza Strip. Hamas earlier also said its delegation will travel to Cairo on Saturday to resume the negotiations. The resistance group said it dealt with the ceasefire proposals with a positive spirit. Hamas has been calling for a permanent ceasefire and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. The movement also wants the unrestricted return of displaced Palestinians and the flow of more humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip.